to Tidings, and this is Hazel Khan. Today my guest is Rob Hopkins, founder of the Transition Towns Movement. Rob is speaking to us from Totnes, Devon in England, and we're talking on Skype. Welcome to Tidings, Rob.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Thank you. And I'm very pleased to introduce you to the WPKN audience in Connecticut and Long Island, for whom Hurricane Sandy is actually a very recent memory.
Absolutely. Well, we're following that with horror from here. So my profound sympathies to everyone who was part of that.
Yes, thank you. When I first heard about Transition Towns, I thought of it as broadly sort of a better way of living, of building communities that would learn to do things the right way, more sustainable, more intentional, using less of everything, buying local, strengthening the local economy, bartering, and generally being more enlightened within a reduced carbon footprint. The looming threat, as the Transition Towns information came, to me anyway, the looming threat was peak oil and climate change, but also there was this promise of a better life. Now, when I read the blogs and the webs of the Transition Towns all over the country and the UK, and several TED Talks and your books and you've also done your PhD thesis on this, it seems to me to have become more sharpened into a disaster preparedness thing, which of course reflects the prevailing mindset in much of the United States right now. But does this mean that the emphasis on the local and the low carbon economy and so on is in danger of becoming sidelined?
No, I'm not sure where the disaster preparedness thing has come from. When we started doing transition, the emphasis was very much on peak oil, climate change, and what do we do about it? And transition has always been an experiment and always been framed as such. I think over the last couple of years, the shift has gone very much more towards creating new local economies for places and economic resilience. So places are taking, you know, there's always been a kind of a movement around localization. I think that movement has not necessarily managed to translate that much into kind of viable enterprises on the ground and actually creating a new economy for the places that we live. And that's what we're starting to see now with all kinds of different transition projects, setting up new local food enterprises, community energy companies, big scale local currency projects. So I think actually what we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years is transition growing up incredibly rapidly and moving from being something that was exploring what the world would look like beyond the age of cheap oil to actually not waiting for permission. And in 34 countries around the world now, thousands of these bottom-up transition initiatives, actually just getting on with the practicalities of creating a new economy, a more appropriate economy for the times that we live in.
So I got it wrong. I got it the wrong way around. It may just be a US kind of emphasis, and it may be a temporary one or a current one, let's say. In general, would you say that the whole Transition Town movement is a long-term strategy or a short-term strategy, or is it both?
It's about the transition bit, I suppose. It's not so much about where we end up. It's about how we get there. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think I heard a talk a couple of weeks ago by a man called Kevin Anderson, who is one of the leading climate scientists here in the UK. He runs the Tyndall Centre at Manchester University. He's one of the most kind of outspoken climate scientists. And his take is basically, if we want to avoid 2 degrees and going over 2 degrees, then we have to start cutting emissions now by 10% a year, year on year. And that's never happened before. That's historically unprecedented. We have the technologies for how to do that in terms of the wind and the solar and the energy conservation and the bicycles and all that kind of stuff. What we don't have is the social technologies by which we actually refocus our communities in terms of that being a desired direction. And so you could think of transition in that sense as being a social technology. It's really about how do we get from here to there? What are the first steps we need to take? What do the, as communities, what do we need to learn in terms of skills? Where does the personal resilience come for that journey? Where does the community resilience come from that journey? And when we started doing transition, I always imagined that we were talking about something that was an environmental process. But really now, after 6 years, it feels like a cultural process. And, you know, there's all kinds of academic definitions of resilience resilience and about it being the ability to withstand shock and blah, 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 blah. I was reading a book with my 10-year-old recently, which is an English poet called Ted Hughes, who was married to Sylvia Plath. Okay, so Ted Hughes wrote these kind of creation stories, and one of them was called How the Tortoise Became. And in that story, God takes clay from the ground and shapes it into animals and breathes into it, and they fly away or walk away or whatever. And actually, it struck me that transition, in effect, is kind of about breathing possibilities into the place that we live. It's a process which starts and does that over time. So then, when we encounter disturbance and shock and uncertainty, we feel we have lots of possibilities at our disposal, and we're excited about those possibilities. That feels to me to be the key work of transition, really.
So does that mean you're actually actualizing the potential that's already there?
I mean, we talk about that. We use this term about is that it's about unleashing the collective genius of a place. You know, we have this idea that if we want to make change in the place that we live, we need to bring a coach load of experts in with their clipboards who are going to walk around for the day and do us a plan. You know, but actually, most of what we need, we already have. So it's really a question about mobilizing that and engaging people in that in a way that feels as inclusive to as many people as possible, that people feel excited about, that has a sense of being a historic opportunity to do something extraordinary. And that's really what transition groups are doing, I think.
Yes, which is actually one of the questions that I had was people are, I think, already doing a lot of the things, whether it's bicycles or growing food in a particular way or buying locally or bartering or any of those things or using solar panels, or I'm just looking, repairing, sharing, helping, doing things that they're already doing independently of transition, the movement. So the idea would be then, I guess, to gather them together. And what it seemed to me was that the transition movement umbrella is actually a very good way of collecting all these disparate elements or components, making them into components of this movement.
I mean, it doesn't matter if people call it trans. People can call it what they like, and you know, and ultimately, yeah, there's people doing all kinds of different stuff, and that's fantastic. And I suppose, like I said earlier, we've always framed transition as being an experiment. It's always been an experiment, and our sense is that transition is a very useful tool for bringing those people together under a kind of an umbrella and a common cause. And what it does is it asks the question, how is this place going to work if and when oil costs $200 a barrel? How does it work? And everybody has a role to play in that and something to feed into that. That's a very kind of useful question for looking at these things through. And certainly in quite a few places, actually, transition becomes a useful way for the community and the local government and local businesses to sort of come together and look at things through that lens.
There's something slightly I found confusing about the idea of a transition town. How do they start? Do they start at the grassroots level and then bring in local government and other institutions? Or can it also be the other way around?
We always said that we felt that transition is something, you know, transition isn't going to do absolutely everything. You know, what we need is we need national government responses, we need local government responses, we need business responses if we're going to do this. What transition is the bottom up bit, or is a version of the bottom up bit. And so we always say that transition is something that local government supports but doesn't drive. It's driven by local people. And in some places, I talked to a politician from one place, he said this is fantastic. He said if transition didn't exist, we'd have to make them up.
Sometimes there will be combat between the town, the institutions of the town, and the grassroots people. Other times they will just be working at a very different pace and with, fairly different assumptions. So I imagine it's not always a terribly sort of congenial relationship, but maybe that's just my way of looking at things.
Well, it's going to be different everywhere as well, you know, and sometimes, I mean, it's particularly interesting, I think, in Southern Europe at the moment, in Portugal and Spain and Greece and Italy, where the economy is really, really in a dreadful state. I talked to a woman in Portugal the other day who's doing transition. She said that the mayor, who a couple of years ago was quite sort of standoffish about transition, came to see her and just said, "Help, help me. I don't know what to do." And there's all kinds of interesting examples of transition group where the local authority literally has no money at all, and then sort of seeing transition in a whole new light as something that's where that's generating solutions and answers and responses. You know, in the city of Bristol here in England, the city council has worked very closely with transition from the beginning. They're the first city in the UK that's done a peak oil plan for the city. And the city recently launched the Bristol Pound, which is the first kind of city scale local currency here, which the local council have been very supportive of. And there was a newly elected mayor for the city who was inaugurated last week. And in his inauguration speech, he announced that he would be taking his full salary in the local currency. You know, so there's some really interesting ways, places where people do work very closely with their council. There's a place in Italy called Montevello, where there was a very active transition group, and there was an election coming up. So two of the people in the group said, well, we'll run for the council, and they all got in. And then the council then has a very active transition group in the community and a local council, which is really about trying to support that process, which is really the right way around, I think.
But as you say, each place does it in their own way.
Absolutely. That's part of the beauty of transition, I think, because it's not like a It's not a Coca-Cola franchise. You know, it's something which is different in every place and arises from that place and from that culture. And what we tried to design with Transition was something that felt like open source software, so that anybody anywhere could pick it up. It didn't feel like this thing from England. You know, it felt like something that you could take and make fit the place. I'm writing a book at the moment, and I've been Skyping with people all around the world who are doing transition. In Brazil, there is transition, and it feels like a Brazilian thing. And in Spain, they do transition. It feels like a Spanish thing, which is absolutely how it should be. It roots in place and comes from that place.
On your website right now, there are 127 official transition initiatives in the US. But at what rate are people, are new towns coming on? Just if you could give some perspective on that.
For us, it's very useful to keep a list of people who register with us, because it means that we get a sense of where it's going and what's happening. So we have the official ones, but then they're what we call the mullers, which is the ones that are mulling whether they're going to become official ones or not. Like in Japan, for example, I think there are maybe four official initiatives, but we know there are about 40 transition groups across Japan. And in Sweden, there's about six official ones, and we know there are like 70 or something. So people often really like a process where they can go through a very, very simple, very light touch process to be able to say, we're now official. And often they might have a little party to celebrate or get in the local paper, or people feel very proud of having started this process, feel like they've got a head of steam going, and then get in touch and say, okay, we're ready to do that now. Sometimes groups that are mulling ones just carry on with that for ages because they don't see any point in becoming official, and they can be more productive than the ones that are actually official. So it's quite a loose kind of process. It's really exciting. There's still lots of new groups coming forward. You know, people refer to them, so we're the 127th initiative in the US, you know, but that's it really. It's very light touch, as you
Yeah,
say.
obviously the transition movement in the UK is much is older. It started earlier. Are there differences between the US, let's say, and the UK or anywhere else?
I've been speaking while I've been doing this research over the last few weeks with transition groups in the US. Most of them have said, no, not really. I think some of the language maybe, you know, like we like calling a launch event a great unleashing, you know, felt a bit peculiar. But other than that, I mean, it's been extraordinary to see how transition has landed in the US and the enthusiasm with which people have picked it up and the projects they've done. It's been an extraordinary and quite kind of humbling thing to see, really. It's fantastic.
But have you seen a sudden spurt of interest in the US after Hurricane Sandy?
I was very interested actually to read about Occupy and how and the role that Occupy took in some parts of New York afterwards as well, in terms of, you know, organizing around sort of supporting people. That was really inspiring. Yeah, I think transition very much kind of sits as, for me, as part of that whole sort of movement that's going on and taking so many. You know, Paul Hawken always talks about it being like the Earth's immune system kicking in at this time in history, and, you know, Occupy and transition and all these other things that are going on very much part of that. It's one of those kind of self-organizing bottom-up responses which take a whole range of different forms, really. And, you know, it could be sort of actively protesting, or it could be building. I suppose one of the ways in which transition is different, because I don't fly, so I tend to kind of only speak at events outside the UK by Skype or whatever. And I was speaking at an event in, where was it? Somewhere in Germany yesterday. And there were people there from degrowth, from the degrowth movement. and which is quite big in the in Europe, in particularly in Southern Europe. There is sort of a political movement, I suppose, which is directly kind of critiquing growth and talking about the need for a post-growth society. But I think the difference is that transition doesn't start out with a perspective that says growth is bad and we have to get rid of it.
Rob Hopkins, founder of the Transition Towns movement, is speaking to Tidings from Hazel Khan via Skype from Totnes in Devon. This is WPKN Radio.
I suppose one of the ways in which transition is different, you know, the analysis of transition, because transition is a social technology, if you like, that is designed to work at the local level. And so here in Totnes, for example, where I'm speaking to you from today, which is the first transition group in the UK, you know, we're just about to produce what we're calling an economic blueprint for the town here, which is the first thing I know of, which is a kind of localization plan for the town, which argues its case economically. So we've mapped the local economy. How much money do we spend on food? Where does it go? What is the local economy in terms of food? Where does the money go? Where are the jobs? And start to map, actually, if we were to intentionally localize aspects of the community, what's the financial benefit of doing that? Arguing the case for, rather than sitting in the face of the economic crisis that's hitting us more and more, and going, where's the internal investment? Where's the inward investment going to come from? Where's the government money? Who's gonna come and open a factory here? Actually, it's really looking at, how do we do the internal investment so that we spend our money in a different way and drive that economy and drive the push towards more local building materials, local food. But what's exciting about that process here in Totnes is that it's not just done by Transition Town Totnes. It's the economic blueprint of the town council, the district council, the chamber of commerce, the local schools, the local colleges. And if we were upfront explicit about saying we're a campaigning organisation, we're a left-wing organisation, we're a right-wing organisation, we're anti-growth, that coalition would just fade away in the night like mist. So actually, the way that transition argues is it's about economic resilience, it's about community regeneration, it's about bringing people together in these times. So in that sense, it is quite distinct, I think.
Does the reverse happen, that people from the transition groups then become actually officials in the local government?
It certainly has happened in some places, yeah. And our town council here voted about a year ago to become a transition town council, although no one's quite figured out what that actually means yet. But it's definitely an indicator of a strong aspiration to be part of and to support this
So
process.
Totnes is actually, I suppose, an example of how good it can be for the transition towns, because it's the first. You live there, right? So that helps, I'm sure. But it's taken, what, 5, 6 years for this to happen?
Five, 6 years, yeah. And you know, sometimes people come to Totnes and they say, I've come all the way to see the famous transition town Totnes, and you've still got cars everywhere. What's going on? You know, and actually, a lot of what people expect or imagine they're going to see when they have their mental picture of a sort of eco Shangri-La, like the wind turbines on the edge of town and the really interesting sort of urban regeneration with super straw bale buildings and stuff, that stuff just takes ages. And at this stage, we're at a point where there's a lot of those big projects that are just on the verge of tipping and becoming a reality. But we also do a lot of stuff which is about trying to reduce energy use and carbon emissions here and now. We have a project called Transition Streets, which won a very prestigious award here last year, which is about behavior change. So the idea is basically you get a group of people on your street together, between 6 and 10 households, and you decide you're going to meet up in each other's houses 7 times. You look at energy 1 week and water the next week, and you make pledges of what you're going to do. And on average, people cut their carbon emissions by about 1.3 tons. save themselves about £600 a year. But 700 households in the town have done that now. So it starts to become a very meaningful level of energy reduction. But the most interesting thing about it for me, like I said before, in terms of it being a cultural shift rather than an environmental shift, is that when I meet people who've done it, they don't say to me, "Oh, do you know, Rob, it's fantastic. I've just done transition streets and I've saved myself 1.3 tons of carbon." Actually, what they say is, "I now know Sandra over the road and we're doing this. And I know Dave. I never knew the guy down the end of the road could do that." And in all the surveys that we've done, it's actually been feeling more part of the place that you live, better connected to the community is the key outcome that everyone reports, even though they're also making all these reductions. So it's not just about waiting for those big infrastructure projects to kick in. It's also about just starting now where we are with all kinds of different projects. Transition Town Totnes has led to at least 40 projects starting in the town over the last 5 or 6 years.
Can you just define some of the terms? If you could explain resilience and also the word permaculture, what is resilience? What, how you would define sustainability?
So permaculture is, for me, where I came into all of this. Permaculture is a design system that was created in the 1970s in Australia. When we talk about creating a sustainable settlement or a sustainable farm or a sustainable household, we have all the different elements like the garden and the house and the water and the energy. Permaculture is the design system for how to stick all those things together as efficiently as possible. It's kind of the design glue for a sustainable society. So I taught permaculture for many years, and it's a very interesting thing that integrates natural building and local food and organic gardening, all that kind of stuff. For me, transition was about trying to scale up permaculture and try to take the design principles that it has into the mainstream. Resilience is feels really important to me because it's a when we talk about sustainability, often there's this idea, this mental picture that what we're trying to do is to move towards, this idea of a steady state, or the idea of sustainability is something that can you get to a point where you can just kind of carry on an even keel for a long time. Resilience argues that that doesn't really happen because actually we need to respond to change, and we need to respond to uncertainty and things that happen. So resilience is very much that thing of looking at how societies or economies or ecosystems or people respond when they meet a shock. So when they hit a shock, do they just fall to bits, or how do you kind of pull things back together again? And now I really think of transition as being community resilience as economic development. What does it look like if the increasing resilience building of a place is actually seen as a historic opportunity to rethink and revive its economic fortunes, really?
To get back to the paragraph or so before you said all this, is it is all about people. It's people doing these things. So you can look at it as an economic system or any of those things, but in the end, it is the people. And they themselves, at an individual level, have to show resilience. And one of the things also that is mentioned in the literature is the whole idea of reskilling, skilling, skill sharing, the whole idea of what the people do bring to the party. That's one level. But psychologically, the other thing I've seen is that there's a lot of training going on all over the place, which means people need to be helped to go into transition, to make transition. Is that right or not?
Yeah, I mean, we use this term in transition, which we call the great reskilling, which is the idea that we've lost a lot of the skills that we're going to need in order to weather the next phase in history. It's skills that we don't necessarily have anymore. We've lost a lot of the skills about how to work with other people, how to communicate, how to manage groups without everybody falling out with each other. We've lost the skills around local food production, food processing, milling, food storage, all that kind of stuff. There's a new economy which is there to be created, but we aren't producing young people through school with the right skills. We're still training people for the 20th century, which assumed that we were going to be that any problem we came up against, we could just throw cheap energy at it. A more localized, more resilient economy needs different skills. and it needs people. And so, one of the big things in transition is really about supporting each other, the people who are doing this process as well, because I'm sure you know as much as I do. In the environmental world, in the campaigning world, burnout is an occupational hazard, and people get exhausted. And transition is intense work. You're out there in the community. You're trying to gather people around a set of ideas, which can be quite distressing. Peak oil, climate change, these aren't easy things to kind of fit into your worldview. And so in transition, like here in Totnes, for example, we have a whole process of supporting people who are on the front line of doing it, and giving them mentors and support, and trying to reduce the burnout through kind of taking a bit more care of each other, really. And so there are lots of events as well. I think it's one of the things that you see in lots of places is this idea that the only reason change doesn't happen is because people don't have enough information. So all we need to do is to give people enough depressing videos and talks with lots of graphs in, and everyone will go, "Oh, I see. Oh, how wrong I've been." It's only helpful if it's presented in the context of what we can do about it. So whenever we would host an event about climate change or something, it would be presented in the context of all the things that are going on around here that you can get involved with. It would be presented in the context of an event that gives you the space to digest what you've heard and discuss it with other people. I think that idea that you just show an inconvenient truth in a darkened room and then send everyone off on their own at home to go and sit and have a sleepless night is really irresponsible. And I think in transition, we really try and provide a lot of support with that, because cultivating personal resilience is an essential thing to do alongside creating community resilience.
For anybody in the US, in our listening area, who's thinking of now that they've heard you speak, what information sources should they go to? What are the websites? And secondly, what should they beware of and what should they be motivated by? Maybe that's the way of asking question.
Well, if you want to find out some more, then I would go to transitionus.org. That's really the home of transition in the US. If you want to find out about the wider movement more globally, then it's transitionnetwork.org. And I do a blog which is called transitionculture.org, where you'll find all kinds of strange ramblings from myself.
And you can subscribe, and to which you can subscribe, which I
And to
do.
which you can subscribe, yeah. And also, Transition Network does a newsletter that goes out every month, which you can also subscribe to. There's a book called The Transition Companion, which is distributed in the US by Chelsea Green, which is a very sort of comprehensive guide to doing transition. And there's loads of films and videos and stuff on YouTube. I suppose the things that to know in terms of getting started is about finding a group of people, really. There's sort of a certain amount of educating yourself to do, in terms of the issues that are involved. But if you become part of Transition US, can give you all that kind of support in terms of not reinventing the wheel. And the advice I usually give to people is to find out what's your nearest transition initiative and go along and talk to them. And they're usually really happy to come and help out and support and give some talks and tools and pass on their
And
experience.
they usually have meetings, like regular or irregular meetings or potlucks or something like that, that maybe
Yeah,
one could go,
exactly. There's all that kind of stuff going on. And people are really keen to help each other and support each other. This is one of the things that I really found from ringing around everybody, was that for a lot of people, this isn't like sort of this year's big thing. A lot of people, this is their life's work, and they're really, really passionate and committed about this. So, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of resources, but ultimately find some people who are already doing it, and I'm sure they'll be really keen to help and support.
It's not a hobby. It is a
It's not
dedication.
a hobby, yeah, no, exactly.
Rob, thank you very much. I'm really glad that we were able to connect. Thank you very much for your help.
My pleasure. Okay, brilliant.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
All the best. Bye.
That was Tidings from Hazel Khan, where you heard Rob Hopkins, founder of the Transition Towns Movement, speaking to us via Skype from Totnes in Devon. Tidings is broadcast on the second Wednesday of every month at 7:30 p.m., right after Free Speech Radio News on WPKN 89.5 FM Bridgeport, streaming and archived on wpkn.org and available as podcasts on hazelkahn.com. Tidings is produced by Tony Ernst.